Sir. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, May 24th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Dickens.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Costello.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Farrar.
Here. Item three is our flag salute, and Arroyo Grande Lions Club will be conducting the flag salute. Mr. Terry Orton is here. If you would remain standing for our invocation, Gene Bowser of the Baha'i Faith will present our invocation this evening.
Please place the flag and repeat with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
O thou compassionate Lord, thou who art generous and able, we are servants of thine, sheltered beneath thy providence. Cast thy glance of favor upon us. Give light to our eyes, hearing to our ears, and understanding and love to our hearts. Render our souls joyous and happy through thy glad tidings. O Lord, point out to us the pathway of thy kingdom, and resuscitate all of us through the breaths of the Holy Spirit. Bestow upon us life everlasting, and confer upon us never-ending honor. Unify mankind, and illumine the world of humanity. May we all follow thy pathway, long for thy good pleasure, and seek the mysteries of thy kingdom. O Lord, unite us, and connect our hearts with thy indissoluble bond. Verily, thou art the giver, thou art the kind one, and thou art the almighty.
Thank you, Gene. It's a wonderful invocation. Terry, don't run off. Got you before you left. We just want a little bit of information on what the Lions Club is up to these days.
Well, thank you, and really what I was just hoping to do is encourage everybody to do whatever you can in the community to help out, and if you like any of the things that the Lions Club do, we'd be happy to have any of you come and visit. Of course, the father-daughter dance is coming up rather shortly. We barbecue for the rec department, and we really enjoy that one. It's one of our favorites, and we've also been working with the hospital on a couple barbecues and things like that, too. So if you have any desires, talk to one of the Lion Club member or any other service club, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Item 5 this evening, special presentations. We have none. That will take us to item 6, agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only. And all further, we will close community comments and suggestions. That will take us to item number 8, consent agenda. This is a group of items that the council has had an opportunity to review, and we normally approve all of the consent items in one motion unless there is an item on consent that any member of the council would like to pull for further clarification or individual action. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items to be pulled? Actually, I have one. Thanks for reminding me. I just want to pull 8F for clarification for the public. At the last council meeting, the council directed staff to prepare a letter for the Board of Supervisors supporting a one-year suspension or delay or timeout, if you will, in the county's process to relinquish maintenance of flood control zone 11A to the Department of Water Resources. And I think for the purposes of our audience both here and at home, the best way to approach this is simply to read the letter so that you understand clearly what this action is all about. Dear Board of Supervisors, on behalf of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande, I respectfully request your support to postpone by 1 year the relinquishment of maintenance of Flood Control Zone 1-1A to the Department of Water Resources. This will provide sufficient time for agreement on a solution that better meets the needs of all involved. DWR is scheduled to assume control of maintenance duties of Flood Control District of the Flood Control District July 1, 2005, so immediate action by the Board of Supervisors is necessary. Approval by the county to relinquish maintenance of Flood Control Zone 1-1A took place on April 1, 2003, without an advertised public hearing. The proposed assessments will be economically devastating to the property owners impacted, including senior citizens, business owners, and farmers. Our community is involved in efforts to increase the economic viability of agriculture in our area, both within the city and the adjacent county areas. However, we fear that this measure will add an economic hardship to local farmers lacking the capacity to assume additional expenses and still maintain profitable operations. The 12-month postponement is necessary to complete fiscal planning efforts already underway, which will likely result in a combination of grant funding and assessments at an amount lower than projected DWR costs. This would result in both better improvements and cost savings to property owners. If unsuccessful, relinquishment to DWR could then continue, although we are confident that that will not be necessary. Therefore, postponement provides a great opportunity with little risk. Thank you for your consideration. And on behalf of the council, this letter will have my signature. So I wanted to clarify just that item on consent this evening so that, again, the audience and the community understands what this is all about. So with that...
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. At the request of the Senior Advisory Committee on their April 6th meeting, they are requesting that the council change their meeting schedule from monthly to quarterly due to the lack of ongoing new items. They've typically just been reviewing continued business items, particularly related to the taxicab program and community updates.
Okay. Any comments or clarifications on the staff report? I had a discussion with Ross Congable, who is my appointee to the Senior Commission. It's probably been about a little over a month ago, I guess. And he asked me about this, whether we were locked into the schedule. And the issue being is that on a monthly basis, they simply don't have recurring agenda items. So I suggested he bring it forward, and apparently they did. So if there's no... further clarification on the part of the council. This is a public hearing. If there's any member of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as a whole. Anyone like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing portion of 9A, bring this back. And Councilmember Arnold, why don't we start on the left tonight?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have no problem with this. I think it's appropriate, and I'll support it. Thank you.
Thanks. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, also, I had the same conversation with my representative, and he had indicated that they didn't have enough of an agenda, so I can certainly support it.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens?
Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I too have no problems with this. I would only just add an extra comment in regards to the lack of a fifth member on the Senior Advisory Commission. At this point, I do not have an appointee, and I would just ask the audience and the public out there, if they would like to serve as a senior commissioner, that I'd be more than happy to hear from you, and they can contact City Hall and fill out an application. But in regards to the issues that come before this body, it appears that it's not sufficient enough to meet on a monthly basis. So the commitment level isn't as great either. So I have no problems with this ordinance and support it wholeheartedly.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
And I have to echo my colleagues' sentiments. I don't have any problem whatsoever in going to a quarterly session on this. If sometime in the future issues start to arise that necessitate going back to a monthly meeting schedule, we can do that at that time. I think, though, in terms of not overtaxing the resources of the folks that have volunteered to be on this commission, if the work isn't there to keep them active, let's go to the quarterly schedule.
Thanks. Ditto. And with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move that we adopt an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Royal Grande amending Section 2.28.050D of Title II of the Royal Grande Municipal Code to change the regular meeting schedule of the Senior Advisory Commission.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens? 13, Public Works, and Title 15, Buildings and Construction. During the staff review, it was determined that Title 13, dealing with water and sewer provisions, is in need of a comprehensive update, which would be more appropriately handled by the Public Works Department on a separate basis and presented to the City Council at a later date. Additionally, the police chief has identified, although Titles 8 and 9 have already been updated, the police chief has identified a few necessary amendments in Title 8, which is health and safety, and Title 9, public peace and welfare, dealing with penalty provisions in the code regarding the sale of tobacco products, as well as the addition of a state-required exemption clause in Chapter 9.04 relating to offenses against public peace. Finally, it should be noted that the Community Development Department, independent from this project, is in the process of completing updates to Title 16, the Development Code, in accordance with state law to ensure consistency with the general plan. The majority of the proposed amendments are minor and are clerical in nature, dealing with organizational and grammatical changes. These amendments have been outlined in the staff report and the draft ordinance, and the department directors are available to respond to council questions in their respective areas of responsibility. If the proposed ordinance is introduced, it will return at the next regular meeting for adoption. It should be noted that one of the goals of this entire municipal code review was to remove references to specific fees in the code to permit the City Council to establish fees by resolution. As a result, this proposed ordinance repeals specific building application and inspection fees in Chapter 15.12, and a fee resolution will be prepared for adoption at the next meeting concurrent with adoption of this ordinance. It is recommended that the Council introduce the proposed ordinance repealing, amending, and adding provisions to Titles 8, 9, 12, and 15 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code to provide internal consistency with current city policies, procedures, and practices. That concludes my report, and we are here to answer your questions.
Thank you. Questions for Kelly? Mayor Pro Tem?
Kelly, one quick question for you. If we go to page 3 of the ordinance itself in the staff report, point I is amend section 12.16.070 as follows, and we're changing the language from commercial, multifamily, apartment, or industrial to multifamily, residential, mixed use, or commercial. I think, and I looked this up in the code, that the title for 12.16.070 still contains the word industrial in it. So for consistency's sake, do we need to strike the word industrial from the heading of the code section also?
Oh, the title of the section? Yeah, absolutely. That'll be done automatically. Teresa in Community Development provided input to make that change consistent with the updates we've made. Okay. But the title of the section will be automatically updated.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Thank you. Do you have a question? Yeah. Councilmember Dickens?
Kelly, this may be a question for Dan. But, Dan, we're in the process, or I think doing maybe an update of our city tree ordinance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And do any of these revisions that are put in here, and I'm specifically referring to page 2 under item G, where it talks about we've put some additional language in here about submitting lists to the director of Parks and Recreation Facilities. That's cleanup language, but then it
specifically won't be affected. We will be adding chapters to the ordinance dealing with pruning techniques, proper pruning techniques. We will be discussing issues regarding removal of trees in single-family residential areas as well. There will be a host of issues will be coming to the Parks and Recreation Commission as well as discussing with the ERC.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other questions? I had a comment, and Dan, this may be appropriate for you as well. or I thought I saw Don loitering, skulking in the back room, too. But I had a comment on page 2 of the ordinance as well in paragraph G. And the language just seems a little loose. If you look at A under where it says amend section 12.16.040, says a public works director may, from time to time, prepare a list of particular street trees that have created and present an immediate danger to pedestrian travel. I think the, I guess that lead-in sentence I had a problem with, may from time to time. It suggests that he can if he wants, and if he doesn't want, that's okay too. And I was just thinking that maybe we might want to make that a little more directive in its orientation. Any issue with that, Don?
No, I don't have any issue with that. I think the wording is stated the way it is because we don't do it on a regular basis. We do it when we, you know, have the opportunity to do it. So it's not every fall or every spring or every summer. It's from time to time. But I think we can modify that if you have some suggestions.
Well, even if we say the public works director will periodically prepare a list, that gives you some discretion in terms of time frames. But it's a little more directing, indicating that it's not something that we're going to let slide forever. That just, you know, seems trite, but that whole thing seemed a little bit loose. And then you tell me if, and Dan, this is maybe more in your shop, but if we move down to H, G under where it says amend section 12.16.060G as follows, says the director shall cause the physical inspection and inventory of all landmark trees. And you wanted to change that from 2 years to 5 years. And I guess my concern is whether or not the inspections should occur more frequently than 5 years. Landmark trees in the city are generally oaks.
We right? have oaks. We have a variety, actually, oaks being the largest majority of them.
Well, I was wondering if, you know, we might consider, I'll see what the council feels, if we might consider splitting the difference at maybe, you know, 3 years or so. And then I was going to ask if it would be appropriate, since we're examining these trees to determine their condition, if it would be appropriate to put some language in there that would guide us if we determine that there are trees that are not healthy. For example, if we were to add to determine their condition and presence and actions taken to restore the health of any trees that are unhealthy, or what words to that effect, some form of mitigation or treatment to see if we can't restore the tree. So that's where I was going with this. I don't know how the rest of the council feels about it, but I was hoping for some language in that direction.
Follow-up question on that. In terms of the condition of the trees, what's appropriate? Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it 5 years? What would be a reasonable period of time to be making these kind of inspections?
Part of the reason we went through this is 2 years seems to be a little quick. It was also at a time where we were a little more shorthanded on staff. Oak trees, as you all know, are the type of variety of trees that they grow slowly and they die slowly. We do have sycamores on the list. We have redwoods on the list. We have a buckeye on the list. We have about 80 trees on the list. Some are on private property. Others are city-owned trees. So basically, you know, we'll go out there and take a look at it. In some cases, we do have conditions where we have to address it immediately. But as I stated before, we could narrow that time from 5 years to 3 years, I think, could be appropriate.
Thank Anybody you. Have any heartburn with that?
No. I have one question, too. Now, if there's any kind of input from the city, from any person that would call in about a tree, you'd still go out and inspect them. So this is forcing that every tree be inspected a minimum of 2 to 5 years, whatever the time we settle on. But if there's a complaint or a concern, they're going to be inspected. And then once they fall on the list as a concern, then is the follow-up more frequent?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I kind of thought that 5 years is actually beyond possibly any given term, so therefore at least one report during a term might be nice. So I could go with three or four.
Any other comments?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor. Dan, do you happen to know, just not specific numbers, but how many of these landmark trees are actually on public property as opposed to private property?
I would say approximately 60% of the trees are city-owned. The other 40 are on private property.
My thought would be that typically when a tree that's on private property is put into the landmark tree ordinance or is covered under that particular category, those are typically individuals that are wanting to preserve that tree. So it's not as if it's something that needs to go away. And I guess my thought would be maybe we need to distinguish between the two. I think we have those that are on private property are probably going to be watched over much, much closelier in a sense, because they've got people that's in their backyards or front yards or something like that, and they're going to be concerned about it. If there were an issue, they could certainly, I think, you know, that would be brought to someone's attention prior to. Whereas I think we have a higher responsibility for those 60%, let's say, of those that are on the public property. We may need to look at those more often. So maybe we split them up and put a bigger emphasis on monitoring those that are within the public realm. Just a suggestion.
Any other comments? Okay. If there are no other comments on the staff report, then this is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience that would like,
you know exactly what we're going to do if we in fact find that there's a problem, because I would expect that certainly the goal of the city is to save any of the trees, any landmark trees. So I certainly could support 3 or 4 years, whatever the consensus is for. Other than that, yeah, I can support all the other changes that are proposed here.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Well, I think that there's an issue of being prudent with staff's time. And I think part of the reason why this came forward is to make sure that we're being diligent and not putting ourselves in a position where we're having to allocate staff in areas that hopefully are going to only increase if we get more and more landmark trees. So I think, to me, it's prudent to kind of split it up and to maybe look at for every 3 years for those that are trees that are within the public realm and maybe 4 or 5 years for those that are in the private. I don't think that's going to be a problem. So that would be my suggestion. But other than that, I have no problems with the rest of the ordinance. I think it's cleanup language, all very necessary and appropriate.
Okay, thanks. Councilmember Arnold.
I, too, have no problem with the cleanup portion of the ordinance. I think it's very appropriate. As far as Council Member Dickens' suggestion, I could support his proposal, or I could support going to just a three-year overall, and I would lean that more towards what Dan thought was prudent as far as the use of the time of the agency. So either way would be fine with me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd have to echo what I just heard. I think that, first of all, I have no problem with the cleanup language on any of these measures. In terms of the schedule and doing the trees, I would defer to our Director of Parks and Recreation to give us an idea of what would be most appropriate, and I'd probably just go along with what his judgment would be on that.
Okay. Thanks. Well, I'll go back to my original position. The thing that concerns me about splitting public and private is that I know that trees that are on private property are going to get viewed more often. I'm just not certain that the property owners know exactly what to look for. I'm not certain they can tell whether a landmark tree is healthy or unhealthy. If they're close by, right outside your door, you kind of walk by them and they become invisible after a while. And so... I'm not really certain that they would get more attention. So, and Dan, you know, in terms of discretion, I would defer to you. You know, 3 or 4 years is fine. You know, whatever. It just seems like 5 years is a little bit excessive. So 3 or 4 take your pick. I don't care.
3 years would be fine. We could just do basically 25 trees a year, for example. Do one phase, then 25 the next year, then 25 the third, then start to cycle over.
Okay. And the only other comment that I would make would be, Don, on your language, where it says may from time to time, I would just say something like, you know, will periodically.
That'd be fine. Yeah.
So it's not drifting out there. Aside from that, I'm fine with all. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Just one minor clarification. That's in GA, that's will periodically prepare a list.
Right.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Is that what you meant? Yes. That's what I meant. Is that okay with everybody? Okay. Well, we like happy campers over there. So. Roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thanks. Let's see. It takes us to 10 continued business. Let me ask a quick question here, Kelly, before you get comfortable, and Dan. Was Angela here today for 11A? How was that going to be presented? Let me ask the council, does anyone have questions on 11A?
Actually, I have a question.
Is it going to go fairly quickly is what I'm asking?
I think it'll go quickly. Yeah, I do have a question. So if you're thinking of...
Okay. Since 10A is likely to take a little bit of time, what I'd like to do is maybe hear 11A first, if it's okay with the council, get that out of the way in a few minutes, and then we can spend time on 10A.
I've known Jeffy.
Okay. I'm wondering if she's here.
Acting City Manager Hernandez indicated he'd be glad to give the staff report if she's unavailable.
Oh, good.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
Actually, I see her running across the street as we speak.
That's not a friendly look that you just gave him, Dan.
He's also agreed to answer all legal questions this evening.
Well, that's great. We're going to have to review your salary. I mean, you're doing it all.
I was all comfortable in there watching TV.
Well, we were trying to get you out of here so you could really go home and get comfortable. So
I can watch American Idol.
Well, if that's what you're going to watch, then forget it. You can get here.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council. I am pleased to present the fiscal year 2004-2005 third quarter report. The general fund balance for June 30th, 2005 is projected to be approximately $1,830,000, or 15% of appropriations. While this is below the City Council goal of 20%, excuse me, it was anticipated by staff and is primarily due to the city's required contribution towards the state budget deficit and loss of VLF revenues. This probably sounds a little like a broken record, but it bears repeating that it is projected that the city's fund balance will be impacted in fiscal years 2004-05 and 2005-06 due to the requirements to assist the state. However, this shortfall will be recovered in fiscal year 2006-07, when we are anticipating no longer contributing the $244,000 to the state and with the reimbursement of approximately $280,000 in motor vehicle license fees. Time, I would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Councilmember Guthrie, I know you have one.
Yeah, fairly specific one. On the on page two, the third paragraph down, it says staff expects expenditure savings will increase the general fund balance to meet or nearly meet the 20% goal. Are you referring to 0405, that in fact during the last quarter we're going to recruit the 5%? Or is that over the three-year period?
I think in this instance, on page two, am I correct?
I think, yeah.
What we mean is we budget certain expenditures, but sometimes they're not spent. Yeah. So we're thinking the fund balance will probably be higher than what we're projecting.
Okay. And do you have, because you're asking for several interest, do you have idea what areas you're expecting to come in under budget? Are they all capital items, or are they operational items?
It just varies. I could look and see and give you some you know, idea of what they are, but it just depends on salaries may come in shorter. You know, it just depends on what fund we're looking at. If we're looking at the general fund, it just depends on if we've hired new people or, you know, it's just hard to tell without just seeing it at the end. But,
okay. Because right. It does make a difference whether it's operational savings right. as opposed to just deferring capital projects.
Right.
So that would make a
difference. And we'll have some carryovers probably at the end of the year, too. So it's just hard to judge what projects we're going to actually do and what they're going to carry over into the next year.
Okay. And the other question I had was regarding I'm going to say about the fourth paragraph down, it reads, additional adjustments are being requested for ongoing completed CIP projects. Are these related specifically to general fund projects, or are these the capital improvements? This is exclusively the capital improvements from general fund, or are these water-related or sewer fund?
I think it's several.
Combination of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's actually included on one of the schedules.
Okay.
I'm not good enough to know to memorize the schedule numbers, but Schedule B, if you go down to the capital project fund.
Okay. So would I read that then, that for instance, just starting right at the top, water neutralization? That in fact you're so expecting to spend all of the funding that's in there
on the $230,000.
Yeah.
And that would really depend on Public Works. We'd probably be able to answer that, but
just trying to determine how to read the schedule.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you go down the capital project funds, we're fund 350. You can see the different reductions, and then it gives the explanations on the side of why they reduced them.
Okay. All right. I'll be able to look it over from there.
Okay. And if you need any assistance, just let me know.
Okay. Those were my only questions regarding.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. I have none either. 11A is not a public hearing, but as is the practice, we generally allow the audience to come forward and comment. If you have an interest in this item, this would be an opportunity for you to come forward. If you would, once again, limit your comments to 3 minutes or less, address the council as a whole. Anyone like to come forward on 11A? Okay. So we have a motion and, I'm sorry, did I hear a second?
Yes.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Council Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Council Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, Angela. You're out of jail, free to go. Okay, that takes us, now it takes us back to 10A, consideration of interpretation of objective Ag 1 of the agriculture, conservation, and open space element of the general plan.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Last month, Council Member Guthrie requested the Council consider an interpretation of general plan policies under Objective AG1 of the Agriculture, Conservation, and Open Space element and determine if a general plan amendment is necessary to clarify the interpretation. At issue is whether the intent of the objective relates to properties that aren't currently designated agricultural preserve, or conservation and open space. Objective AG1 reads as follows, avoid and or mitigate loss of prime farmland soils and conserve non-prime agricultural use and natural resources. The critical word in this sentence is farmland, which is defined in the development code as those land areas of the county and or city specifically designated or zoned as agriculture, agricultural preserve, or agricultural general. This definition clearly omits properties designated residential, commercial, mixed use, or any other land uses not related to agriculture. Policy statement AG1-4 has been of particular concern or confusion, which states in summary that any loss of prime farmland soils is considered a significant adverse environmental impact requiring mitigation. Read by itself without referring back to objective AG1 or the definition of farmland, it appears that this policy would apply to all properties within the city having prime soils, regardless of the land use designation. Lands containing prime soils exist in several land use districts throughout the city, including the village core, mixed use, and single-family residential. Given the definition of farmland, however, it is clear that policy AG1-4 does not apply to these other non-agricultural land use districts, even though they may contain prime soils. For clarification purposes, it might be beneficial to include the definition of farmland in the general plan under objective AG1. Adding this language would require a formal general plan amendment.
We were to go ahead and recommend some form of clarification on the general plan, and you did come back with a resolution. When you prepare the resolution, is that via the Planning Commission, or does that come straight back here?
General plan amendments generally go to the Planning Commission first.
So if you were to prepare a resolution for review, then it would go back to the Planning Commission, then we would have the benefit of their recommendation
when
it came back to us.
That is correct.
Okay. Any other questions, clarifications on the staff report?
Kelly, in regards to page 4 of 5.
Of the staff report?
Of the staff report, thank you. In regards to the statement that's being made here that most of the village core downtown, village mixed use, trafficway mixed use, and village residential are urban developments on prime farmland soils. I specifically identified the village core downtown, and I'm curious as to where that information comes from.
Well, I have some maps. Did you get a copy of the,
I do.
The maps? Okay, let's see. Map 5 shows all parcels with Class 1 and Class 2 soils. I'm going to try to find the right one. You wanted it by the land use designation?
Well, specifically the village core downtown, and I think there may be some inconsistencies with the statement that's being made here as far as prime land soils. And I guess I'm wondering, I'm looking at the maps, and it's not exactly clear when we're talking about the village core downtown. I'm looking at that area because there's another statement in here that I think needs to be at least clarified.
While you're there, is there a way you can bring that up? Can you enlarge it? Zoom in?
What this map shows is basically all Class 1, 2, and 3 soils. It's kind of hard to designate between, say, Class 1 and Class 2. Class 3 is the lighter orange. As you can see, I don't have a pointer. But the Teresa, do you want to be like a van of white? Where the village is, it's right over in this area. So as you can see, that is predominantly class.
And what struck me, I guess, was this, is that we're talking about, and the arguments being made that infill projects in these areas, such as the East Village Plaza, have not previously required mitigation for conversion of prime farmland soils. And so I just went back because I didn't realize that anything, in my opinion, anything north of Arroyo Grande Creek was actually considered prime. I went back to the soil survey, and I actually looked at those particular soils in that particular area, and they actually consist of three different types of soils. There's a Santa Lucia, very shelly clay loam, which is actually a class 5. There is a gravelly loam, which is a class 3, non-prime, and there's I can't even pronounce these words, exerts and exrolls of urban land complex, which they don't even classify. And those are the three classifications, according to the soils report, of basically every property that is north of the creek. The prime soils are actually south of the creek, and those are primarily consisting of what's called the, mocha silty clay loam, and that's would be our prime soils. And I guess I just want to make that clarification, at least from the soils report, that there may be some inconsistencies with what we're seeing on the map and the colors. And I don't see anything that's considered prime ag land north of the creek. I don't know if there's any comments on that or just more of an observation.
There are other maps that sort out as to if they're irrigated, then they become class prime soils, irrigated, non-irrigated. That's kind of hard to see. Yeah. I believe that for in particular, you're right, there's different types of soils in any given area, and so it's kind of hard to say, well, it's predominantly, class 2 or class 3. Class 3 is not considered prime, and I believe that East Village Plaza is...
class 3, if it's irrigated or has the possibility to be irrigated, per our code, is prime. Mm-hmm. And what I'm telling you is that according to the particular soils report on that particular soil classification, it is class 3 regardless of whether it's irrigated or not. Mm-hmm. So it's not considered prime. And I think that the reason I bring that up is it's important when we make a bold statement such as this is an example that was prime. It's not prime. And I think it's important for us to look at that. Okay, that was my only question in regards to the staff report. I have comments later.
Okay. Any other questions or clarifications?
One quick. Were these maps part of these are part of the original report that was done
back
when we did the
access?
So this was
report.
This was part of the report mm-hmm. that we adopted back when we did the first conversion. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Okay. If there are no other questions or clarifications in the staff report, once again, this is not a public hearing, but I suspect there are people in the audience who would like to comment on 10A. Once again, please limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as a whole. Anyone who would like to come forward on 10A?
In my presentation, was going to address that project, but if you'll bear with me, Mayor, I'll just discuss the specifics of my analysis of the staff report. I'm kind of surprised at the staff report because it certainly does not embrace everything that's stated in the staff report, and I assume the council has read this whole staff report. I want to point out to the council, if you'll be kind enough to bear with me, those items which I think are missing from the staff report. The first point is that the staff report refers to references to council meetings that took place between August 2001 to October 2001. The issue that's being entertained tonight really deals with a revision that took place after Mr. Dickens and Mr. Farrar and Mr. Costello became council members, as it pertained to revisions of the 2001 general plan. And that took place in the area of December 2002 to March 2004. I mean, that is not referenced in the staff report, and that's what this is all about. Because the issue that's being entertained tonight is not a clarification of the policy. The issue being entertained tonight is whether you change the policy. You understand that I've been on the other side of this question. However, when you decided as a council that this is the policy of the city on ag, I embraced that because of the old cliche, you do your best to make the right decision, then you do the best to make the decision right. You set your jaw on the policy. Now you have an issue before you that says, wait a minute, the policy should be changed. I'm suggesting to you the policy should not be changed, that you may change it in the future. That is your prerogative. But it's not the right time to do that. And, in fact, as I look at the staff report, I'm critical of it, frankly. And I'm not critical of the girls who prepared it, all right? But I'm just critical of the staff report. It doesn't include, for example, the analysis done by Nancy Parker on the policy. It should. That's the reason why we're here tonight. Brilliant analysis by Nancy. Further, as you look at the reasoning in the staff report, there are three reasons they give you. One, and they call them definitions, and arguments that they attend those definitions of why you should change this policy. Lots of prime farmland soils, the argument of agricultural use is not permitted and not zoned. Conversion was founded as a provide an infrastructure to support ag. It's not that today. A lot of it is, but it's a retirement village. It's a great place for people who are working in San Luis Obispo and so on. So the point is, this village was on prime soils at one time, but it was a logical development, obviously, when it needed a railroad, to build a railroad through here and have a few bars to entertain the farmers and so on. Now, it is also kind of important to me that the staff report does not consider the agricultural conservation open space element principles, the principles stated in your policy. They're pretty good principles, and I don't have to tell you what they are. The four principles in your policy, such as resources that are irretrievable and are irreplaceable, need to be protected and preserved, etc. All right, you understand in the policy those four principles. In referring to the report on conservation of prime agricultural resources for the city of Arroyo Grande, the report that was added to the city's consideration, there's no reference to page 25, which deals with the agricultural conservation prevention of urban conversions. Very important part of the background for the policy of the city.
Mr. Page, excuse me, we're coming up on 8 minutes. Is there a wrap-up here pretty soon?
Well, it's a long staff report. If you want me to sit down, I'll sit down.
Well, how about another minute? Can you wrap up?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
This is censorship, all right?
Okay.
You're considering an important policy. It's a long policy, and there are a number of omissions made in this policy and this plan presented tonight. So you can whitewash this thing and provide skid marks so you can approve the Creekside development.
Okay, well, you've given us some good food for thought here. Thanks. Yeah. Anyone else?
This is censorship.
Good evening. John Knight with RRM Design Group. I'm a planner and working on a project that's one of the pipeline projects or projects currently in the pipeline. All this does not specifically apply. We're not here to talk about a specific project, as Otis mentioned. It does affect a project which we're working on, and we're interested in seeing this this interpretation or clarification come out in a certain way. And I think what the city staff's asking for tonight is simply confirmation. There's no language proposed. The language is already written in your general plan. It's been interpreted, acted upon by the Planning Commission, the staff, the City Council for the last almost 5 years since the 2001 plan was adopted. And that confirmation is that the ag conversion policies or objective in the general plan does not apply to non-ag zone property. You think about that for a second. If it does apply to non-ag, is that non-ag properties are not intended to be subject to this policy. And I'd encourage you to confirm that the objective AG1 does not apply. Thank you very much to non-ag properties. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hello, Council. I'm Nancy Parker, 1127 Vard Loomis. I know they keep doing that to me over there, too. I will try and talk fast so I get under my 3 minutes. I only have 2 pages, so I think I can do that. I have studied this issue a great deal. I've talked to many people about this issue because at first, to me, it was very confusing. And I also had trouble with grasping the main issues here and had to break it down first before doing that. I realized that a couple of you have been to the Planning Commission and have heard me speak on this subject, and I've talked to several of you about this, so I won't go into major detail, but there are a few points that I wanted to bring out. First of all, there are two main issues that I think people have trouble regarding this. First of all, it's the zoning, ag zoning versus prime soils issue. And second of all, it's the CEQA review issue in the process. And I will quickly address both. First of all, the zoning versus prime soils. If property is designated prime soils but is not zoned agriculture, does this negate the fact that it's prime soil? Our policy Ag 1-4 reads, loss of prime farmland soil shall refer to the unavailability for ag use. Loss of farm use occurs in any area where farm or ag production can reasonably occur. If that area is contiguous to other farmed prime, in other words, if it's contiguous to other farmed prime soils, is it adequate size for farming? Has it been historically farmed? Or is it currently zoned for farming, or is it in ag or rural residential zoning? SEEQ refers to the physical existing conditions at the beginning of an environmental review, and this includes the soil. This is different than zoning. There can be environmental impacts to a soil on a project regardless of the zoning. For instance, Tract 1998 is zoned residential, but it contains wetlands. It also contains oak trees, as do several of our other properties, contain oak trees that have to go under the impacts and have mitigations for those natural resources, just like this would. It has nothing to do with the zoning of Tract 1998. It's not zoned wetland, for instance. Specific lands have been identified as zoned agricultural or rural residential. However, this does not remove the fact that specific properties have also been classified as prime farmland Class 2 soils. Prime farmland soils have also been identified as being a natural resource and must be classified as such, just like oak trees and water. Just because a parcel of land may be zoned single family does not give it entitlements that override the environmental constraints. Nowhere in our general plan does it indicate that prime soils must be zoned agriculture to be exempt from impact mitigations. I also looked up rural residential zoning because it's interesting to me that we keep addressing ag zoning that are small. And I know that Kelly had mentioned soils like, for instance, underneath the village, underneath homes, backyards. They also refer to, I think it's in the city council meeting a couple times ago, referring to structures that are surrounding it. So you have urban structures surrounding use. Um, These particular uses that staff brings up and that City Council had brought up before all fall under the same category as prime soils, but you have to remember that you all have different degrees. So these would probably not require mitigation, but would be considered insignificant. One of the primary issues here that is, to me, the most primary issue here, however, is the fact that prime soils are considered to be natural resource both by our general plan and by CEQA. Under environmental law, prime soils are considered to be a natural resource and impacts are subject to CEQA review. I'm talking so fast to get into my 3 minutes, I'm sorry. If this impact is considered to be significant under our general plan as well as through a community review process, then it has to be mitigated. Zoning does not play a factor with regards to natural resource issue. The question is, does property that is considered prime soil under the criteria of our general plan constitute a natural resource, or is it only considered prime soil if it's zoned for ag usage, like rural residential or agriculture? Under CEQA, if the land is or has potential for farmland usage, it is designated prime soil in character and therefore must be mitigated. As with any impact, consideration of significance, as I had said before, must be determined. Is the property usable farmland? Would the creation of either an upgrade in zoning or the building of structures on top of the soil be a significant loss to the natural resource, either in part or as a whole? Surely my backyard on Vard Loomis is not farmable, nor is property in the middle of the village. However, other criteria need to be addressed. How large is the area? Is it contiguous to other farmed prime soils? Could the property be considered infill? Is it surrounded by urban growth? Does it have potential for water? Just as an oak tree is considered in Uri Grande to be a natural resource and not is zoning, it must be mitigated. The city must determine how significant the loss is in order to determine what mitigation, if any, is required, or if it can be mitigated to the satisfaction of the community. These questions all need to be asked when determining whether or not it must be mitigated. The city must decide what it deems to be significant, though it's through its general plan process as well as community review. We currently have thresholds under our general plan that define what is significant. If a project comes in that would exceed the thresholds we have set, then, pursuant to CEQA, the impacts have to be avoided or mitigated. Right now, our general plan follows CEQA in the rulings of natural resource of prime soil. It also establishes our own criteria of what we determine to be prime soil and what the mitigations will be with their removal. In determining if changes are to be...
This is a policy for the city in any location in the city. I keep going back to the 2001 general plan update. And I always ask myself when I leave these meetings or I go to a planning commission, why can't we just follow the general plan? And why can't the general plan just be our constitution? And why is everything mitigatable or negotiable? I am so tired of everything being negotiable. Why can't it just be that we're going to follow what we said we would follow and follow it to the letter of the law? Loss of prime farmland soils as a significant adverse environmental impact. Those impacts need to be avoided, not mitigated. They need to be avoided. We need to decide what our definition of farmland is, but we also need to decide what the definition of a neighborhood plan is for our general plan. If we're going to go through and we're going to start defining every word that we don't know is exactly what we're talking about. I believe that prime soils are prime soils. I'm sure they're in my backyard because I'm right along woodland near the creek. And I'm sure they're in my mother's backyard because she's 130 feet from Jim Dickens' prime soils over in his farmland. And I know that if we, in a perfect world, dug up certain neighborhoods like Valley Gardens or over at Greenwood and Tanner, and you removed all the asphalt and all the homes, and the land was vacant, and you asked a farmer, would you like to farm this land? They'd say, sure, we'd love to. Because we have a history of loss of farmland with different developments, like Valley Gardens, the Coco Ellsworth property, the Tanner Greenwood area, Berry Gardens, and even the Cooey property on Farrell. Now, those aren't prime soils, but it's loss of ag. We have a cumulative loss of ag, and we're never saying we're going to add to it. So I kind of wonder if we're looking at loss of ag per parcel, or are we looking at it as a total percentage for the city? And that's something to think about. Seems like people are always coming up to the city and asking to convert their ag land to something else, and yet I very rarely hear of someone wanting to take their something else and convert it to ag land. Some of the properties we're talking about are considering the majority of the percentage of the property is vacant land. It's not like it's got asphalt driveways or buildings. We're not talking like the village core. We're talking about major parcels where a small percentage is a farmhouse, and the rest was once a vineyard, an avocado orchard, light farming, chickens and hens and what have you. If there was a historically significant home on a property, we would not say it's no longer historically significant if it wasn't zoned public facility or historical area. If it was on prime farmlands, we would still say that building is historically significant. And so what I say is the prime soils and the prime class one and class two, they're there no matter what the property is zoned, and it needs to be treated that way. The zoning and the environment are two different things, and we can't confuse those. If we're going to preserve prime soils, then let's preserve them. Let's go back to our general plan, and let's stick by what we said. If we're only preserving ag land, then we need to start qualifying that. But I say let's preserve those natural resources, the prime soils we have, no matter what they're zoned. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? No one else?
The issue of prime ag that existed in the village was raised at that time. And I sort of felt it was pretty clear that through the discussions, at least at Planning Commission, and I'll let the council members who were on council at that time speak to that, that we weren't going to start this, what I'll call a slippery slope, toward where do you stop? And I think Nancy used the comment, it probably doesn't apply to a single-family home in the village, but frankly, that's only probably. Where would we end this? And I didn't see anything in the discussions either at that time that we would have differing levels of significance. It really was that if for some reason there was going to be an ag conversion, that there was going to be a one-for-one conservation of other ag lands. And that was the only threshold of significance that I ever heard discussed. Maybe there are some other interpretations of that, and like I said, I'll be very interested to hear from the other council people on that. So in my mind, it's pretty clear that was the intent. And when you look at the way that projects have come forward and been reviewed, and the way that the code was actually written, I think staff done a pretty good job of demonstrating that was in fact the intent of the way. No one challenged the code at that time. So that's why I brought this forward. Maybe there are some specific things that need to be clarified in the general plan. I do think the definition is a bit weak, although I think that when we do talk about prime farmland, that there is something of a definition there. I'm actually a little more concerned about the fact that it addresses only residential and never mentions commercial, for instance, is actually something of an issue to me, since one of the properties you identified is actually a commercial property and not a residential property. So that's why I brought this forward. I thought we were moving down the road in a certain direction. I do understand clearly why there's concern about the interpretation. As for the specifics of the CEQA interpretation, I'm open to hearing from staff exactly how we apply that, because I do certainly understand that clearly prime soils, independent of how they're zoned, are identified as a natural resource, and could require then that we would have a overriding considerations of every single project that is on prime soils. I just don't see if we don't put some sort of a really clear demarcation between when we're going to require mitigation and when we're not, then I think we're going to be in trouble here. And I don't know if that requires a general plan. I can actually see interpreting it the way staff has, although I think it is kind of awkward. But clearly it's been interpreted that way in the past, in the past couple of years. So I'm open to certainly working our way through this. I'm not sure what really is necessary going forward, whether it is a simple interpretation or whether we are going to have to change the language in order to make that clear.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I found this a good, compelling argument, but I agree with Councilmember Guthrie that I do think it's a slippery slope if we start to try to go down it. While you were talking, the notes that I actually was making were the village on prime soil. Should we require mitigation for remodels, additions, teardowns, et cetera? The timing issue in that if you have the zoning, whether you built a home on it or not, is really what we're talking about here. It's more or less a technicality that there's not a home there today. They had the zoning to do it. And so I would have a real problem with applying this to properties that are zoned residential. Based on our code right now, you would really require someone, if in this case with the Creekside property, that they would actually have to ask for a change of zoning to agricultural to be allowed to farm their property. Based on the current code right now, they would not be allowed to. So in this case right now, they'd almost be at a standstill. They're not allowed to farm it as a residential property, and they wouldn't be allowed to build on it under your definition. So I agree that we might want to look at how we are going to work with the whole CEQA issue. That was raised tonight that concerned me a little bit because I am trying in my head to understand how do we delineate prime soils from an oak tree. That I definitely, although we do obviously allow mitigation for the taking, I'm definitely open for discussion at the council level on how do we want to resolve that. But as far as how do I think our ordinance applies, I think it specifically does talk about farmlands and that's what we're actually looking at, not just prime soils. So I think the staff has interpreted correctly, and that's where I would continue to go with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to just come out and just state that I think that the agricultural objectives and policies are consistent as currently written, and I think that we need to make the distinction between a couple of definitions. And I think Nancy did a fine job of doing so, but I think it's important to reiterate this. And I think even in the staff report, it kind of goes back and forth in regards to these particular definitions. The first definition that we need to get under our belt is the fact that we're talking about prime farmland soils. Prime farmland soils are those naturally occurring non-renewable resources suited for growing agricultural products. That's what we're talking about. And they're classified and they're identified in the general plan and in other areas as to whether those agricultural soils are prime, non-prime. There's lots of different classifications, but our general plan goes into the definition very clear. And I think we need to distinguish is the prime farmland soils are a natural resource. It's not the farmland. It's not the operation in and of themselves. And then we deal with the definition of what we call agricultural lands or farmlands. And those are the actual properties for which we have either zoned for agricultural purposes or concurrently in agricultural production as defined by our general plan. And sometimes we get those two definitions confused. And it's important for us to separate those two items for the very reason that we need to, as individuals up here making decisions, we need to not only look at good land use planning, which I believe we've done through our general plan update process, and we've, with every CEQA review, deals with these particular issues specifically. Aesthetics, agricultural resources, air quality, biological resources, cultural resources, geology and soils, hazardous materials, noise, population housing, public services and utilities, recreation, transportation and circulation, wastewater, water, and land use. All of these areas are identified through the CEQA review process as areas that need to be reviewed for their environmental impacts or potential environmental impacts. And I think that we need to, and these are done regardless of zoning. We don't take a parcel like we refer to the tract 1998 and look at that and say, well, because it's already been designated as residential, we don't need to mitigate the biological resources. That's not true. We do need to go through the CEQA process, and we need to do what's called reasonable development based on what's there. I think that the rub comes here is that when we're looking at parcels that were not identified in the general plan as being either ag or ag preserve, and we're looking at their potential for having prime farmland soils, I think that's just part of the CEQA process. And once we go through the CEQA process, we have to apply what's reasonability. We have to be able to, as decision makers, say what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And in my opinion, it certainly is unreasonable to require mitigation on a 7,200 square foot lot in the village. That's unreasonable, and that's not the intent of the general plan. But I would suggest that it is reasonable to require mitigation on a four-acre parcel meeting the prime soils definition as related in Ag 1-1.2. That, to me, is reasonable. And I think that what we need to do and what we get caught up in is because this hasn't been done yet. This is the first time these issues are coming up, and we're grappling with, well, what does that mean? What's a one-for-one mitigation? We look at the general plan, and we make some suggestions. And because we haven't gone through this particular process, I think that there's some fears and there's some hesitation as to how we move forward. What's equitable, what's not equitable, what's reasonable, what's not reasonable. And I believe that's why the CEQA process exists, is so that we can work these things out. We all can pretty much guarantee that if we're going to remove an oak tree, it's pretty reasonable that we're going to replace it with either three, and I think we're up to five now, oak trees. And that's kind of a standard. We kind of say, okay, great. If that has to happen, that's what we're going to do. We're going to lose this 60, 70, 80-year-old oak tree, but we're going to replace it with something else. It's not the same tree, but it's called mitigation, and that's a biological resource. We have identified properties that are not suited for long-term agricultural use and would probably better serve the city in other categories, such as commercial, such as appropriate mitigation. What are some of the things that we would be looking at in that instance? It's not that we wouldn't allow those parcels to be built upon. The same thing we're dealing with Track 1998. We're going to allow, I'm assuming, once it continues to come forward, some form of reasonable development based on the CEQA review and the appropriate zoning. But what I would suggest that there needs to be an appropriate mitigation. That's something that we're going to need to discuss as a planning commission, as a council, and to look at what's appropriate. What we're talking about, a one-for-one exchange, in my opinion, the things that I would probably support would be that we're really looking at not if you take up 1 acre of ag and take it out of production, you have to then purchase 1 acre over here. No. What we're doing is we're saying we're taking 1 acre out of potential availability for ag. So what we want to do is we want to identify those areas which we have within the city or next to the city that we've designated as ag and possibly lock those in the future in an ag easement in perpetuity. So we're talking about purchasing possibly an ag easement in the future. And that, to me, would be appropriate mitigation in basically exchanging one for the other. And I think that in doing so, that meets many of our other cities' goals as well in regards to our other agricultural objectives and policies that are not particular in the staff report. And the last thing I want to say is that I think, to me, it dovetails nicely with the idea of affordable housing. We made some development decisions in certain areas of the city where we did not think it was appropriate to put affordable housing. And so we took in-lieu fees. And we took those in-lieu fees so that we could then designate where we would best serve the public in regarding helping out and putting affordable housing in the right place. That's no different than, in my opinion, than what we're talking about here, an appropriate and reasonable mitigation in regards to prime farmland soils. So as far as I read the objectives and I work through what we currently have in place, I don't think there is a problem. I don't think there are inconsistencies. I do believe that the current position that these policies do not apply to non-agricultural properties is not correct. I think they need to apply across the board. And yet, I want to state that it needs to be applied from a reasonable standpoint. We're not talking about mitigating, in my opinion, unreasonably small parcels within the village. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about looking at the policies that are here amongst us and making reasonable decisions as to how they would appropriately work within CEQA and within our zoning. So with that, those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to start by going back to revisiting what Mr. Guthrie had to say, Councilman Guthrie had to say. I was part of the Planning Commission also when this issue came forward back in 2001. And I seem to recall that we really were dealing essentially with agricultural objective policy, AG1, is avoid, minimize, and or mitigate loss of prime farmland soils and conserve non-prime agricultural use and natural resource lands. Well, what does that mean? Avoid, minimize, and or mitigate the loss of prime farmland soils.
That might be an older version. Excuse me for interrupting. I think didn't we take out the word minimize?
Correct. The word minimize is now gone from that objective.
So it's avoid it.
There's a lot of trauma over that. So.
Okay, so it's avoid or mitigate the loss. That's fine. It doesn't change my reading on this. Didn't change my feelings. If we take that and then go down to AG 1.1, designate prime farmland soils not predominantly committed to non-agricultural development as agriculture and or agricultural preserve, whether or not in current agricultural productive use, that defines what prime farmland soils are in agricultural use. If we go to AG 1-4, it talks about the loss of prime farmland soils, and it says the loss of prime farmland soils shall refer to their unavailability for agricultural use. Loss may occur through natural causes or development such as coverage or conversion to urban-suburban use. Now, in our staff report here, it says that agricultural operations are not permitted uses in residential or mixed-use commercial districts. According to our general plan land use map. Land use map says agricultural operations are not permitted in residential or mixed-use commercial districts. If you take these and apply them, if a piece of property is not designated as agriculture, it doesn't matter whether it's prime ag or not, the soils are prime or not, it's not available for agricultural use. So the use of it to put anything other than agricultural use is not a loss of prime soils because it doesn't count as an agricultural use. So I would say that the interpretation that we've been using so far seems to be consistent with what's written in our general plan. A lot of good points were made tonight. Otis Page, Nancy Parker, Colleen Martin all made good points, as well as my colleagues up here. But what was the intent of all of this? Was to preserve the use of our agricultural resources. I don't think we wanted to convert back to agricultural uses, other non-agricultural uses that had prime farmland on them. So it seems to me that the interpretation is clear that any prime soils that exist on non-agricultural uses or non-agriculturally zoned or conservation open space uses are not in our inventory of ag.
I may recall, and Mr. Page stated it earlier, when we did the original general plan update, in my mind, I know that there were some issues with regard to our ag element, ag and open space element, so much so that one aspect of it, which was related to five-acre parcels on our rural fringe, caused me so much concern that I was put in a position, as was Councilmember Dickens, I think, of having to vote against the final general plan update, which, after all of the many months that we went through, almost a year, I guess, of arduous debate, there was it was kind of a letdown to be put in that position. So one of the things that we sort of took upon ourselves when the council was reconfigured was to unwrap the ag element and, in my view, tighten it up. And it was at that point that we wrestled with some of the language in the primary policy statement, which was Ag 1. And so the comments that were made tonight with regard to changing the general plan, I think all of us agree that that's not something that we want to do unless we absolutely have to. The thing that's troubling me about this issue is that while the interpretation can be a bit confusing, we don't really have a track record established yet. We don't have substantive evidence that issues that have come forth related to this are going to be that difficult to interpret. I think the standard of reasonableness that Council Member Dickens indicated and the Mayor Pro Tem, I believe, reinforced is a tool that works in our favor. If I'm not saying that we might not revisit the general plan in the future, but to me, the argument against changing anything in the general plan ag element at this point isn't compelling enough because we haven't established a track record. We don't know if this interpretation is going to cause us difficulty or not. If it does repeatedly, then obviously something's broken and we have to fix it. The issue of CEQA, this is pretty straightforward. Just as the Mayor Pro Tem alluded to the general plan giving us some wiggle room, if you will, to make some interpretations, and that's really our job, is to interpret policy given circumstances and conditions and so on and so forth. As long as we're consistent with that policy when we render those interpretations. But as Councilmember Dickens indicated, these CEQA classifications are not going to go away. This is what's here. This is what we have to deal with. But if you look at the CEQA process, there are many tools in here that are related to different evaluation criteria that are available to us to further evaluate in. And after going through the test of reasonableness as it relates to CEQA, probably won't get to a negative deck. I think there's enough tools available here for us to do that. The bottom line for me is I'm not convinced at this point that we have a problem. If as I indicated, after a few times working out with these policies, we find that the confusion factor looms large, and we are experiencing difficulty, then I can see going back and unwrapping the general plan. But that's not something that I would prefer to do, and it's not something that I take lightly. So I guess the timing of this issue is critical for me. At this point, I'm not ready to change anything in the ag open space element. I think there already is enough in there for us to make the kinds of interpretation that we need to make, again, based on the test of reasonableness. So those are my comments, and are there any other observations, comments? Okay, if not, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'm not sure we need a motion. Seems to me that the alternatives, the one that we're looking at, requires no further action. It's just to verify that staff is correct in the way the measure is being interpreted.
Or that we're prepared to.
Is that okay?
Yeah. If the council determines that there's any tweaking or modifications necessary to the general plan, then that direction needs to be provided. If they feel that the analysis that's been laid forth in the staff report and the discussion has covered it, then there would be no action necessary.
Okay. Well, we should probably get some final clarification here then in terms of direction to staff.
If I understand the mayor's direction here, basically is that since we haven't used it yet, let's see how it works, and if necessary, then we'll go back and review it. And I'm certainly comfortable with that. I am a little uncomfortable with the whole CEQA thing, but I guess we'll deal with that when it comes forward.
A quick point on the CEQA thing. Okay. Again, going back to Ag 1-4, establish and apply a significance criterion for CEQA analysis as provided by CEQA guidelines considers loss of prime farmland soils as a significant adverse environmental impact. But then the definition underneath that says it's a loss of prime farmland soils shall refer to their unavailability for agricultural use. In that they are not zoned for agriculture or conservation open space, they're not available for agricultural use. So there's no loss. The loss occurs if you have a piece of property that is designated for agricultural use or conservation open space and you want to
come to real situations. And as soon as we do that, I think it's going to be crystal clear as to whether or not we need to make any modifications. Again, applying the policies and the test of reasonableness. Is there any objection to leaving the general plan interpretation the way it is right here and kind of taking a wait and see position?
Mr. Mayor, I have no objection to doing so, but I would think that it would be appropriate to get additional feedback in this particular clarification. We may be the only city, I don't think so, but we may be the only city grappling with this particular issue because we've taken on an out-of-the-box type of planning approach and protecting ag lands within our urban boundaries. But I don't know that for a fact, and I think it would be imperative for us to do two things, to see how, if indeed there are similar policies in other cities that have dealt with this issue, get some feedback from them, and or get an interpretation from CEQA in regards to this idea of whether or not the parcel is considered unavailable if indeed just the zoning has been changed. I think that to me is the key question. We're making some bold statements based on Ag 1-4.1, and yet that's up for interpretation. The unavailability, does that start with the zoning or does it start with the building? And I think that the thing that I would like to throw out is that we talk a lot about the city council's discretion, and it's not typical, and it probably wouldn't happen, but we have the discretion to actually rezone properties. Rezone up, down, anywhere, that's part of the planning process. So the unavailability is really up for question. Until that property has been built upon and you can't farm it, the prime farmland soils still exist. Again, applying reasonable CEQA review on each particular individual case. So I'm certainly comfortable with leaving the general plan as is, because I think that I believe that we have language in here that actually does exactly what we need it to do. But I'm not agreeing with the statements that are being made. I believe that properties that are currently zoned non-ag do apply to the CEQA review process and need to be reasonably reviewed.
Well, once again, Kelly and Teresa, I think what we desperately need here is a test case. I think what we really need to do is allow this conversation, which I feel tonight is premature, to take place in reality relative to a particular situation or a project. Then it will become clear whether what we have in front of us is ambiguous, unwieldy in terms of a toolkit, or whether we have enough to fairly evaluate through the process. And until that time, I mean, we can sit up here and we can discuss it, but we really won't know unless we actually try.
Issue with a little more comprehensiveness.
Okay. Anything else? All right. That will take us down to item 12, City Council Reports. SLOCOG postponed their last meeting, or canceled the last meeting, but we did have a SLORTA meeting and reviewed budget, work planned, and then went into closed session and discussed labor matters. South County Sanitation District, been attending those meetings as well, and mostly what we're focusing on here is routine plant maintenance, purchase of components. Again, some closed sessions to discuss potential legal matters relative to Zone 1-1A. And that concludes my report. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor. Last week, the Zone 3 Water Advisory Board met, and again, we spent a lot of time talking about the relevance of the Habitat Conservation Plan and where it's going, and we hope to have a much better idea on where that stands by July. I would also note that effective last week, the Zone 3 Advisory Board meetings are now on the cablecom broadcasting systems, such as this meeting is. Don't believe the RAC has met since our last meeting. APCD did meet also last Wednesday, a week early. I was late for that meeting. I was up and attended the Peace Officer Memorial Ceremony up in Paso Robles, but did manage to get to the APCD in time for part of the meeting. Also, a large part of that discussion was on budget considerations and some possible rules changes that are going on. Fire Oversight Committee hasn't met. That meets every 2 months. I think we're coming up on that next month in June. And that's my report for tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. SCAT hasn't met since my last report, so I have no report there. And I did attend the April 28th meeting of the South County Youth Coalition. And primarily, we just had a presentation from a program that's looking at coordinating child welfare services, nothing specifically to the city of Arroyo Grande, but just looking at better serving our families and some of our children at risk. But that's my report.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
The EVC meeting, I think as most of you are aware, John Dunn has come on board as a temporary director or president, I think they actually call him. We are doing our what's called the annual event, which is sort of the report, which will take place actually this Friday morning. I know myself and several staff members are going to attend that. And going forward, there is there's a retreat planned for the next Friday, for the half day on the next Friday, to kind of establish what the direction will be going forward. And I think as we discussed regarding the budget last week, that we'll be looking for some fairly specific directions to where the EVC goes in the future. And that concludes my report.
Okay, thank you.
Phil's right now in the county, and under the current approved areas,
while the dumps themselves actually have a larger landmass they own, what is actually approved right now is between a 17 and 21-year capacity. So both Cold Stone and forget the name.
Cold Canyon.
I mean Cold Stone. And that's what I even have written down too. Cold Canyon. What am I thinking of right now? Yeah, where am I going? And they are definitely starting the process right now to expand, and they feel that it could take up to 10 years to get all the necessary approvals, so that's why they're being ahead of the curve. I also would like to add, this is probably a kind of a tie-in, but one of the things we saw was a video on recycling, and I'd like to possibly look at, because I think you had mentioned about when we were talking about the Planning Commission televised, one of the things is that we don't use our cable channel as much as possible. It was a very good video, and I had a chance to talk to, I think, the Mayor Pro Tem, and he hadn't seen it, and I was thinking it might be something that we might want to see about having shown on our channel, and as we come across other videos like that, too, it's something that that everyone's paid for, so it might be useful for everyone to see. Other than that, the integrated waste management, or no, sorry, the insurance, the joint powers, I have a seminar convention down south. I believe it's the beginning of June that I'll be attending. And that's all on the reports. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Dan, you might want to make a note for when Steve comes back, but the other Steve, I think we'd like to maybe have some form of just an informal meeting and talk about the strategy for doing some of the things that Councilmember Arnold has indicated and see if we can make better use of Channel 20, see what the pros and cons are and where we go from that. There's a lot of information that I think we could use that channel to get out to the community, and it's underutilized right now. I think we all agree. Consider that a councilmember item. But not necessarily one that has to come back here. So, city manager items, anything tonight, Dan?
The only thing to report is this Friday at 11 a.m. we will be having the ribbon cutting for the Trafficway Bridge rail, as well as the gazebo lights. Ceremonies will start at the Trafficway Bridge and will proceed to the gazebo.
Can you repeat that again, Dan?
Yes. This Friday at 11 a.m. is the ribbon cutting for the Trafficway Bridge rail, as well as the gazebo lights.
At 11, I thought it was 1.
11 a.m. And we'll be starting at the bridge and finishing the ceremonies at the gazebo.
The invitations are on the dais.
The invitations are there on the dais. And that's all I have to report.
Okay. So, once again, what time are we going to finish with both of those events?
They should be done by noon.
Okay, good. All right, because council communications is next on the agenda, and at 12:30, I've just been reminded, it rather draconian issue coming up with DWR on his show. Got a lot of good questions, and I think the majority of the issues came out. Any other council communication?
Mr. Mayor, one of the things I wanted to talk about is I want to request that maybe Ed and I switch in terms of the RAC representation, and he be the primary and I be the alternate.
And I have no problem with that.
That's something that I think are we going to have to – can we do on consent?
We'll do it on consent, but it's done by resolution, so we'll have to amend the resolution.
Yeah, we got to change that.
We'll bring that back.
Write that down. And then I just had one thing. This is a kind of a – it was a neat opportunity on Saturday. My son's Cub Scout Pack 13 went to the beach and did a trash cleanup, and I wanted to give them a little special recognition. They collected 40 bags of trash and about 500 pounds, and I really want to thank the Michael Bay family and the Dave Montanaro family for all their help. So thank you.
Okay. Any others? Staff communication? Any staff communication tonight?
No.
All right. That takes us to item 17, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity during our final community comment session to come up and comment on any issue you would prefer to do, present, observe.
Mayor, Commissioner, staff, Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. Two items. One, I'd like to remind council that they did take land that had been designated rural residential, I believe it was the Vanderveen property, and change it to ag land. And I'm not sure what Dorfman property was, but I don't believe it was ag land. I think it was changed from another designation. I can't remember if it was residential or mixed use. It was one of those and changed to ag land. So there is some history of changing zoning. I wouldn't necessarily support that. Certainly some of those properties will come forward in the near future and test that side of it, where you're going to take a property that is in fact zoned ag and have to deal with the conversion and mitigation. The second thing I'd like to say is it appears that staff's reissuing of the water conservation through plumbing retrofit has been additionally successful in the last couple of weeks on my block, a couple of blocks around my house. I've seen four different houses being retrofitted that hadn't apparently been done in the past. So it might not be a bad idea to almost on a yearly basis, maybe at least for a little while, reissue that potential water-saving devices can be installed in your house at no price.
Efforts to develop a soccer field complex at Cevada Lane and El Campo Road, 8E. Councilman Arnold and I had both attended the cemetery district meeting last month, and it was very enlightening. And I do have to commend Councilman Arnold for probably crossing with his wife on knowing that it was not in the city's best interest to have soccer fields at that location. And I would encourage all of you, because the cemetery lies within our city boundaries, to get more interested in what they're talking about at this property. And they're having a public meeting at the Regional Center on June 8th from 3 to 5, which your former Councilman Reynolds will be running. So I invite you to come. The other item on the consent agenda that I didn't speak on that I would like to was the flood control zone 1A. I, too, went to the initial meeting in Oceano, and I agree with your letter. However, I wish it was a little bit stronger and not only encouraging for a delay, but outright saying you're in the intended goal of the people that live in that zone, and their goal would be to have local control. It was very evident that the minute the state takes over the maintenance of that flood zone, the cost would skyrocket, and there was no end in sight. It reminded me of pre-Prop 13. They could just decide however much they wanted to spend and divvy it up amongst X amount of properties. And we specifically asked, I raised my hand, I said, would you be using local contractors, local work? And the answer was no. The state would ship down their workers, put them up in our hotels. Sorry about that, Mr. Guthrie. And they'd be putting them on per diem. And you know, the minute you start importing workers, state workers, for a project like that, that would be going on every year, that the costs would just be growing exponentially. So what I ask of you is that when you're speaking about this, and I know the mayor has been to a lot of meetings, that let's just get down to what we want, what the people in that area want. And what they want is some local control, and they want the assessment area widened so they're not burdened with such a huge cost. It has to be done, but it's just really not their fault. I mean, the silt came from the Highlands and Walmart and a lot of the projects way up the creek. It didn't come from the people that live at the bottom of the creek. and it's clearly punishing some of the most disadvantaged citizens in our South County region. And I just felt for those people. And they didn't, many of them just felt like they were completely overwhelmed with the situation and the costs involved. So I commend you on both your letters, and I encourage you to get involved with both those issues because I do think they affect your citizens. I know the many residents in the Valley Gardens area across from the Rose Victorian, that development, you know, they're talking $1,000 plus in 2 years adding to their property taxes. They own their house outright. That could be 1,000 times what they're paying. I mean, my neighbor pays, what, like $170 a month on his property tax. It's hardly anything, you know. Anyways, so those are the two things. And I also encourage you to find a place to have the public comment on the consent agenda because it's very...